Well, here we are.
It is time, Simba.
If you understand that reference, you might be about the age where we should be working together. It's possible. But it is now one of 3 times a year that I'm accepting clients for my freedom framework, overcoming food sensitivities and increasing energy without unnecessary restriction. My goal for my one-on-one clients is to take them through frameworks and explore tools for achieving 50, 80, 90% of their goals in just a few months and show them how to continue to heal on their own so they don't need me anymore. Honestly, I think we're doing great one-on-one work here, helping women that would otherwise be falling through the cracks, thinking that they're just aging, that they're just moms, that they just, and it may be true that they just have stress, when really those stress hormones and their other core systems just really need some serious support and some serious love to serve them for years to come without symptoms. So if you'd like to clear inflammation, eczema, food sensitivities, or improve energy and brain clarity, I'd love to chat with you. You can book a call with me at kristabigler.com/FSS, kristabigler.com/FSS, and that link will be in the show notes. Stress is the inflammation that robs us of life, energy, and happiness. Our typical solutions for gut health and hormone balance have let a lot of us down. We're over-medicated and underserved. At The Less Stressed Life, we're a community of health-savvy women exploring solutions outside of our traditional Western medicine toolbox and training to raise the bar and change our stories. Each week, our hope is that you leave our sessions inspired to learn, grow, and share these stories to raise the bar in your life and home. My style or preference is to have real conversations and dialogue with real people. And so this is the second month of trying something new, which is a community call or a Q&A or a live way for you and I to get together on Zoom every month on a different topic. So last month was a little open-ended. It was a little more discombobulated, I think, about gut health. This one was a little more organized, but a little less interaction. This one is all about testing stress hormones. So I go over testing of stress hormones. I don't know how you'll feel without seeing the slides, but I wanted to share it with you anyway, because the format is that I go over a handful of slides to give context, and then I jump into questions that people have submitted around this topic. In January, coming right up, I'm going to do one on immune health. That one will be a lot shorter teaching. It's just a topic I see repeatedly and repeatedly in my client calls with our one-on-one clients. And so I wanted to share a little tidbit about that with you. So if you want to register for this, you can go to kristabigler.com/links. Or /community, either one. Links gives you like all of the links. So I think that's the best place. And right now in January only is one of the 4 or 5 times of this year that I'm taking clients. So if you are interested in getting a HTMA or a mineral test done, like I talk about in this episode, or if you want to get your GI health assessed, or you want to resolve some symptoms, or you'd like to optimize your health, or you're interested in kind of this like sustainable approach, pro-metabolic approach, like there's an intersection of several different things. It's integrative process, pro-metabolic, HTMA, GI, etc., then I welcome you to book a call with me this month. You can do that at kristabigler.com or kristabigler.com/links. So I hope this is interesting to you. And if you want to join the January community call where we're talking about immune health, make sure you jump over to that same link and register. All right. So this is really Stress Chemistry 101. Disclaimer, this call is for informational purposes only and should not be substituted for medical advice. I'm a practitioner, but I'm not your practitioner at this time. So I just have to put that in there. Okay, so here's what you can expect. This is a loaded topic, and it's an area that we need, believe me. I'm going to go straight to that third bullet point. I mean, it was a needed topic before. I used to do like a whole month-long program on like adrenal resilience. And I would see like since 2020, it's essential. Like people are so burned out from the last 2 years. So anyway, I prefer dialogue with real people. So these calls are really just like a monthly experiment in community and service. It's really interesting what happens when you have these kinds of calls. But anyway, side notes, like if you need one-on-one help, I'm accepting clients now and to start in January and January to start in February. Otherwise, I have a podcast called Less Stress Life. So now you know that. This is what I'm going to cover right now. What are stress hormones? How you stress test for stress hormones, and then comparing like common functional testing for it. And then the main question everyone wanted to know this week online was, what do you do if you have high and low cortisol? So I'll cover that as well. So I have a bunch of pre-submitted questions. I have about like 13 slides. So I'll jump right in here. Okay. So real quick, 101 is cortisol, what you need to know. And I'll go over like where this comes from. Actually, let me start here. So what happens is you have stress. Your hypothalamus talks to your pituitary, which talks to your adrenals. Your adrenals are these little bean-shaped glands that sit on top of your kidneys. And these adrenals produce different stress hormones, including cortisol, including DHEA, including aldosterone, which is not shown in this image or graphic. So now that you know that little, like now you have a picture in your brain, then it makes a little more sense to see these terms here. So largely, we're going to be talking about cortisol today. That is really essential. What you really want to know is that your body's going to stop making all other hormones to make cortisol. Like if you have stress, your body's like, I don't really care if you have progesterone and you want to be happy and feel good and have not terrible menstrual cycle periods or menstrual cycle symptoms. It does not care. It's going to make cortisol preferentially. And also as a side note, when your cortisol is pumping, think about that whole evolutionary running from the tiger situation. Blood flow diverts from the central area of your body to the arms and the legs. So you could run from a tiger. And so it downregulates digestive function and all kinds of other functions that are core to this area. So cortisol, a fun topic that affects blood sugar and everything else. So we're going to talk primarily about cortisol, but I'll just give a little bit of lip service to a couple other hormones that the adrenals produce also. So aldosterone helps you regulate your blood pressure, and DHEA is one that helps regulate your blood sugar and your lipids. And so why do you really care about those? I would say that stress hormones, my best example for this is it's kind of like speeding. If you have a lot of stress for a while, or you're working nights, or if you're a normal human being and you're waking up and running, like getting ready for work and getting maybe kids out the door to school or whatever, then you run to work and then you do all your meetings, then you come home and it's like, go, go, go. I would just call that speeding, right? And so you can speed for a while, and then you can run out of gas. And once you run out of gas, that is long-term stress to the adrenals. And what happens is cells die. And when cells die, they cannot produce these hormones. So you'll see low cortisol, low DHEA. All of those things are really low. By the way, it's going to downregulate testosterone, so you have no sex drive and things like that. Okay. Remember, cortisol is the most important. You must have it. So it's going to downregulate every other hormone. So sometimes, and I will just say, like from a conventional standpoint, sometimes you can get your DHEA drawn as a blood lab. And if that's low, it's just a pretty good sign or symptom. It's a pretty good sign or symptom that you've got some adrenal stuff going on. Just because if it's low, then your adrenals probably cannot produce DHEA. And a common thing that I'll see is that people get kind of hangry. They can't really wait more than a few hours between eating, things like that. So think about your questions. Feel free to like throw them in the chat if there's stuff that pops up as I'm talking. Happy to kind of like balance your questions in the chat with the pre-submitted. You're the priority if you're here. So we'll get there in a second. So, okay, let me keep going. So I talked about adrenals, where they are, the HPA axis. I think that's important for you to just be aware that all these terms get used interchangeably. Hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal axis. This is the communication system. And I already talked about speeding and then running out of gas. What you should know is that stress hormones or cortisol affects pretty much every other system in the body. And I'm really going to try to just cover like cortisol for the most part today, because it's a lot. Okay. So I do have, you know, this little assessment. This is just an Instagram post we did, and it's very popular. People will say, oh, I have both of these. So I'm going to talk about that. But here's another assessment form. If you want, take a screenshot of this real quick, and this will allow you to assess on your own. And then I'll get to that question, which is, what if I have a lot out of each? Usually I'm in a default, quick answer, usually I'm in a default to low cortisol. And you'll see why, because there's like really three pillars. You still support, like, what's the end message? Love on your adrenals. That's what it's about. So what I want you to know about testing at any point is that tests are not perfect tools. So don't expect them to be perfect tools. Looking at an assessment or your symptoms is really flippin' helpful. So that's what I'm saying. Take a screenshot of this. So people are always so angry about that they can't get help for this. And I have a little note about that on the next slide. But if your symptoms point to this, it doesn't hurt to love on your adrenals. So, all right, we'll talk about lab testing. So first I'm going to talk about like what I know about conventional lab testing. I'm not a conventional provider anymore. Even when I was working in conventional care, this was never checked. And the people I was working with were like very sick. And this was really, none of this was ever checked. Okay, so standard or conventional testing are diagnostic criteria for stress hormones. So this is what I know. There could be things I don't know because I'm, again, not a primary care provider in that capacity. Like you don't come see me like a doctor in the same exact capacity. I do a lot more different stuff. So I'll get to the testing I use in a minute. So Addison's disease or Cushing's syndrome are our basic adrenal conditions, but look how not prevalent they are or by diagnosis. Addison's disease is like 1 in 100,000. At least half my clients have adrenal dysfunction, at least half of them, right? Because anytime you have prolonged stress, it's possible to like not have a system perform very optimally and for you to have symptoms. You could possibly request a single blood test. So you can test for cortisol in the blood. I think it would be useless because cortisol has a rhythm. I'm going to go over that in a moment. Cortisol is a rhythm. It should peak 30, 60 minutes after you get up and then kind of go down over the day. So it would be much more accurate is trying to get a 4-point cortisol test, a salivary or urine test. It's not commonly done, but it's available. You can try to order this on your own. Request a test or direct labs. I didn't get that on the slide, but request a test or direct labs would have that. And they might have something else that I'm not aware of. Every provider's got their own toolbox, but I'm not under the impression that they've got a lot. So the technical term is HPA axis dysfunction, even technically. Adrenal fatigue is not really a commonly accepted term. It's not a diagnosis, but burnout does have a diagnosis code. Most people are really burned out and they have adrenal dysfunction, including, and what I would say, again, when people are like angrily writing comments on my Instagram post about this, I'm just saying, you know, your health providers are probably burned out. So if they don't know what to do, it's probably because they haven't figured out how to help themselves yet. And that's kind of, we're all like that, right? We're all trying to figure out how to help ourselves best. Okay, here's some testing I use in practice. So I said that cortisol has a rhythm or a pattern. So what should happen is you should want to, like, your body has this like essentially natural caffeine state, right? Where it's like you wake up and within 30 minutes, you should have a peak. That should be your peak throughout the day. And it should come down and it should go down in the afternoon. And then it should get lowest at night. This person right here, they're a little delayed. They don't really peak until like 60 minutes later. So it really takes them a while to get up and get going. Maybe this person had coffee. Maybe they didn't. Usually you don't when you're trying to do this test. If you do, you just have to know that. So that way you're seeing why that spike. This person's feeling really tired in the afternoon. Like it could be even worse. And then this person might just feel a touch wired and tired when it's time to go to bed, right? So this is this person's pattern. It's just a little funky. And when you go over that with someone, they're like, yeah, I totally get it. This person feels like just poop all the time, right? They wake up and they don't have any natural rush of energy or cortisol, natural cortisol, and it gets worse and worse and worse. Like they never have any energy at all. Okay. So that's kind of the pattern. What are some other things that I'm looking at on here? So if I kind of went over this earlier, but if the adrenals are, we'll just call it burned out, right? Like you ran out of gas, the cells, what's actually happening is the cells are damaged. So they're not producing hormones as well. What you see there usually is you're going to see this low cortisol and you might see low metabolized cortisol. Now I'm looking, this is an excerpt of a dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. You can pull out and get just the adrenal section. So I have some pros and cons, like everything has pros and cons. I don't actually use this off the bat very much at all. I can tell when I see someone for the first time, like if their adrenals aren't working very well, and I'll get to the 3 points you can do to help yourself. So I don't think I need a test to prove what I can see on symptoms, but I do have the next one is a test I do use initially. And why don't I use this one out the gate? Expense, convenience. It's so like, really, to be honest, like my end goal is not to be more overwhelming, and to have to do this at a certain time is kind of a pain. But the more important piece is usually this test is bundled with like sex hormones, and I usually don't do them separate. It's just not a very good use of money. It's much more bang for your buck if you can do it with the sex hormones. If you're running with sex hormones, then I have to wait around someone's menstrual cycle. So it's just really slow. But the biggest con is if you have any abdominal adiposity, meaning if you have any stomach fat, unfortunately, it can create cortisol and it'll skew my dang metabolized cortisol results. So that was kind of the last straw for me. So this is really good, but does have cons. So FYI. So I really like this now, but there's definitely cons for this from a consumer perspective. I would say the main cons are from a consumer's perspective. So pros, it's funny because maybe 11 years ago, maybe 12. I actually found some notes recently and then I threw them away from a training I went to way back when. And I first learned about HTMA testing way back then. I thought it was like a little hokey and not something I was ever going to use. And it's funny, you know, like you're as good as your education and your learning, your continued learning, I would say. So I was on a girls trip with other professional practitioners a couple of years ago, and we talked all about this. And then I kind of reopened my eyes to it. And I will tell you, the first training I did in HTMA testing wasn't really that good. I had a lot of nuance. It was really focused on supplements, and it felt like kind of exhausting. So I just wanted to tell you those things, because sometimes people see this and like, well, I'm going to go order this. What I want you to know is that it's not very easy to interpret. But what I will tell you, let me briefly tell you about it. It's really awesome for me because it gives me longer term data of what your minerals are doing. Here's the basics. When your cortisol goes up, when your aldosterone's getting used up, when your stress is up, you dump out minerals. So that'll come into like, what do you do about this? So you dump out minerals under stress. And when everything is kind of depleted, you're going to have poor wound healing, poor workout recovery, you know, just like a general exhaustion. You don't have any resources for your body to do processes with, right? So there are different patterns of minerals that you can see, and it'll tell me how the adrenals are doing and how the thyroid's doing. So I really like this test to show me subclinical stuff that doesn't show up on blood tests, but all the symptoms are there. If the thyroid is not working optimally, and if the adrenals are not working optimally, this is the adrenal ratio right here. I see it below 2 all the time. My clients, I see it below 1 a lot. And those are like, oh, real burned out people. And I know that their symptoms are going to be kind of funky. They're going to react to a lot of things kind of coming back online. So they don't have very good resilience, in short. So this is what I use in practice. Going out and ordering this on your own, you could maybe do, but I have like kind of a caveat here at the end. It's like the tests are not useful all the time. Definitely look at your symptoms. So here was some questions that I had from really like, there was lots of questions from that Instagram post that I showed you earlier. But the main one that pops up all the time is, what does it mean if you have everything from both lists? What if you have all the symptoms from both lists, or I have like several from each? Well, if you have several from both high cortisol and low cortisol, there's only a couple nuance. For me, there's only really a couple of nuance things I do differently. Because again, I like the main mantra is love on your adrenals. You don't have to like get obsessed with like, if you did, there's some herbs that are a little more stimulating and some that are a little more calming, but the other stuff that can be supportive either way. So, you know, you don't stress out too much about messing it up. So on the next slide, I've got like my 3 pillars that I work on with clients if your adrenals are high or low. So I'll go over that one in a second. And how do you test for this accurately? So this person said she had saliva and blood tests done, and they both showed low, then high, then normal at different times of the month. Well, that makes sense because your cortisol changes depending on, like my cortisol is probably just a touch high because I just drank coffee and I'm talking really fast to try to get through this really quickly. So I know that my heart rate is up. If I want to slow it down, I just have to slow down my rate of talking and my rate of breathing, right? So of course it would change all over the time, right? Like that's the beauty and the fallacy of a blood or cortisol test. It's a very right now test. This is one of the reasons I like the mineral test, because it shows me a longer term pattern, because hair tissue grows slowly. So if you're not seeing the minerals, that eagle is in the backyard again. It's like looking like an airplane back there. So when those minerals are really dropped off and low, I know that that's been happening for a long time. I know it's not just like something really erratic. I always ask when I'm doing one of those Dutch tests, that first one that I showed you, this one, if I see it looking kind of funny, I'll say, hey, was it a really stressful morning? I had a client one time, she was like traveling for a basketball tournament and doing this test, right? So when I hear things like that, I'm like, maybe I'm just going to back off from doing that test. Life is funny, right? So, all right. So then what do you do with it? For me, this is what I do with my clients. I have 3 pillars I work on for adrenals. So minerals, mitochondrial support, and adrenal support. You can really support minerals and mitochondrial support for anyone. The main problem is sometimes people are supporting the wrong minerals. They're only consuming like salt-based electrolytes instead of other ones. So that's a correction. When we get those HTMA results, I can really like dial in the minerals, but I always start my clients on like broad spectrum minerals and electrolytes. And then I dial it in once I get those HTMA results. Mitochondrial support. Mitochondria, essentially like the organs inside the cell, there's like at least 2,000 per cell, the heart, the liver, et cetera. Those are richer in mitochondria. There's like boatloads of nutrients that support mitochondria function. But this goes back to when you've been speeding and cells have been damaged over long term. When cells are damaged, we've damaged mitochondria because the mitochondria are in the cells, right? So if you support mitochondria, that's how you regenerate things. And it's how cells make energy and turn them on. So you can't really mess that up too much in theory, you know, like everyone could support their mitochondria. I believe that is like the fountain of youth, essentially. And then adrenal support. That's where the nuance comes in a little bit. Some things are more calming. If someone already has really low cortisol, sometimes giving them something that's really calming doesn't make sense. They might need something a little more stimulating, like early in the day, because they're just so flatlined already. They're already like just blah, like flat. And so they need something a little more stimulating. Things that are more stimulating would be like rhodiola. Ashwagandha, like I have really hit or miss with, honestly. But some of that calming stuff, it's really depends on the person. So I do adrenal glandulars, honestly. Some people are afraid of doing that. I have no fear of that. But that's where the nuance comes in if it's high or low. If you don't have to stress about it too much, you can for sure do these other two pillars. So I'm talking about the nutritional angle majorly, but there's a ton of other stuff you have to consider if your adrenals have burned out. Why did they burn out in the first place, right? Like what kind of traumas and stressors and long-term stressors did you have? And I hear it all. So I'll just say like non-negotiable sleep, light exposure, changing your workouts, eating enough and frequently enough. We already talked about how not having enough DHEA leads to unstable blood sugar. You have to have enough cholesterol. It's the backbone to all hormones. So low cholesterol is not something to be glorified. Relentlessly eliminating stressors. That's an ongoing process for all of us, right? It's imperfect. And improving how your body processes it. So I'm trying to slow my rate of speech down. Traumas, that can look very different than what you think it can. I've seen flatline cortisol from IVF, in vitro fertilization, et cetera. Mold is a big automatic cause of HPA axis dysfunction, any kind of like significant stealth thing, but always start with like the easy low-hanging fruit first. So this is what you do when you're trying to support your adrenals. And there's a lot of stuff I could talk about with it. So I'm getting there. I'd love to see more of your questions in the chat. I'm going to leave this Q&A up. Let me go to these last couple slides and then I'll come back to this. First of all, thanks for being here. I hope you found that useful. And then I'll get through these. And if you, what would be helpful so people don't talk on top of each other, I actually love to dialogue with you here actively live if you want. So there's a little hand raise button somewhere in the menu if you want to use it. You can raise your hand and then, I mean, you can try to just unmute and say, hey, I have some questions, but it's great if we can not all like have like a crazy audio mess as well. Let me come back to these Q&As. Let me just briefly touch on these last couple points I have. Everyone always wants a test to be like the answer. And I would just like also, if you're kind of working on this on your own without a practitioner or someone who knows what they're doing, then I would say like, who cares what the test says if you don't know what to do with it? You don't have to like go order something today as like this proof unless you feel like that is what you need or if you're not ready to take actions from it. And again, this is something you kind of learn through experience, but your symptoms are enough to tell you if you have to nourish your glands, your organs. So yeah, that's it. And I just wanted to say this. So I have a couple spots left in December if you want to start working together in January, or I'm accepting calls in January to start working in February. And then after that, I won't take any until April. So you can find that. There's two calls left on Thursday if you need some help, or you just want to, if you just want to talk through your case one-on-one, we can do that. Okay. So these are the questions. Again, like if you want to ask questions, feel free to unmute or raise your hand or whatever. This is the ones in the chat. And I don't know if you're still the person who wrote this. I don't see her still here, but she said, wow. And here I thought it was all my thyroid. I would say like your thyroid and your adrenals are intimately connected as well as your ovaries. So it can be actually both probably, but if you're really fatigued, it can be thyroid, but usually that's going to be paired with hair loss. It's not just one or the other. Like they all love on each other. So you can love on all of them. Okay. So again, interrupt me if you have a question. So Christine asked, how do you accurately test for cortisol levels? And actually, I honestly think she was the one who put that Instagram question I already answered. Accurate is always going to be loose for a lot of tests. Your cortisol changes throughout the day. So just depending on your stress that day or your coffee consumption or your blood sugar or whatever can affect it. And this is, I guess, why I like HTMA because it's a little longer term, but your symptoms are really useful. So that would be my comment there. How do you treat the symptoms of Cushing disease? Oh, and this is, I actually cut this off and didn't wrap that thing. So I missed that from her. So I can try to go back and look at that before we're done here. Okay. Jackie said she's 44, lack of energy, and she's tired and she hates mornings. So this sounds like really low cortisol awakening response. We talked about that right here. This person right here, their cortisol awakening response is not very good, right? They don't have this natural rise at that time, and then it cuts off later. So that would be the thing I would focus on. The antidote for cortisol awakening response is light exposure. Don't roll over and look at your phone. Go look at the sun first. It sends light to your suprachiasmatic nucleus behind your eyes, and it tells your body to produce hormones for the day. It is really starts that simply. So that's a cool thing you can do. And again, like there's nuance. Maybe Jackie's everything is just like flatlined and that's not the only thing she needs, right? How do you reduce high levels of cortisol? So that's a good question. And that's where some of that nuance is. I was trying to like remember the ingredients and some of the components I use. There's a lot of options. One, look at your life. look at what's free first. Look at, I personally like to draw a line down the middle of a page and say, what am I excited about? And what is like taking up rent-free space in my brain? Because you can like supplement to death, but if you don't ever plug the bathtub, you're just going to kind of keep coming back to this year after year. So I would say like, start with like looking at what's going on around you or like where your big stressors are. And look at you if you can change how you're processing stress inside. That will like serve you for the rest of your life very well, save you lots of money. Can you change how your heart is beating? Can you change your rate of breath? And then from there, some ingredients, again, I'm just kind of talking broadly. I don't know this person at all, and I'm not her practitioner, his or her, but magnolia, L-theanine, possibly phosphatidylserine. It just depends, right? So there's different ingredients. Some people really like ashwagandha. You know, to be honest, something I really like also that improves resilience and immune system and is awesome for blood sugar and prebiotic support and gut health is really those beneficial mushrooms like cordyceps and chaga and whatnot. And kind of regular use of that stuff like that can be useful for kind of modulating the stuff. So Gloria asked, what kind of steps could I take to reduce cortisol in a high stress world? I kind of went over, like I would say like, change how you're processing it on the inside. Again, you guys are here live, so your questions are technically priority if you want to talk through your case or if you want to ask a question. Okay. So Debbie asked, how do I increase low cortisol? And that really boils back to these three pillars, minerals, mitochondria, and like very aggressively, it's a 6-month timeline. It could be a year. It depends on if you fix some of the sources of the cortisol and the stress. I will say like one. So I talked to someone earlier today and she had been seeing someone and there was a lot of like food restriction and she wasn't eating enough. And none of those things would be really supportive to a, yeah, I support like the big four, which would be thyroid, adrenals, gut, and liver. I would say those are kind of my MO in life is to support all of those. I just obviously did not have time to cover thyroid in this conversation, but maybe on a future one. So I think I'm going to do these community calls every month. Again, they're like kind of an experiment and a community service thing. And I like to talk to people. So it feels weird that I'm just talking at you, even though you're here right now. So I prefer to talk with people. And so it's just kind of something I'm exploring and being of service too. So it's just kind of fun. Next month I chose because my clients are having so much trouble with this at the moment, or I'm having this conversation so much. I'm going to talk about immune system support, some things to do and some things that you're not doing correctly, potentially in January. That's I think it's January 23rd. And in the replay email, you will be able to sign up for that call, or it'll be in my Instagram links page. It's just not there yet. We just picked the date like an hour ago. So how long does it take to reverse chronic gut inflammation? It could mean, it depends on if like that's the actual only problem, as little as a month, but to finish the job, 3 to 4 to 5 months, kind of depends on you when you say chronic, right? How severe and all of the details around that. So we can talk about it if you want a little bit more too, if you want to unmute and ask about it. If you have chronic gut inflammation, it can just add burden to your adrenals. So that's a thought. I've had mold show up as chronic gut inflammation, which automatically flatlines those adrenals as well. So also I will just say like when I'm doing gut protocols, I start with 2 to 3 months, but then there's like kind of maintenance stuff that you do for a couple of months afterwards. Yeah. Crohn's and colitis are actually some of my favorite conditions to work on. I would say in an ideal world, sometimes you can see a pretty big shift in those in like 2 weeks, honestly, but you would be supporting that for a couple of months. And then I would cycle in. When you have Crohn's and colitis, you have specific, you're more predisposed to having things happen. So you have to be a little more supportive. I have a mantra called more supportive than aggravating. So sometimes like quarterly, even after you're like doing really well, I would support to some extent. So it's a good question. How to interpret Dutch cortisol results, please. So yeah, I kind of went over that. Oh, and actually, let me answer this one first. Let me answer Lindsay's question. How do I know if hormones are affecting weight gain post-hysterectomy? So there's a decent chance that they would be. And here's why. It kind of depends because there's different things that they do. Sometimes they leave your ovary and don't, like, I'm not a surgeon, but they sometimes leave the ovary. Sometimes they don't. If they would actually take an ovary in that process for any reason, then you would not be able to make sex hormones. So this would be like essentially premature menopause. So if we have low sex hormones, low estrogen specifically is associated with gaining abdominal adiposity. So I don't know if that's the case, but these systems are, I talked to you about the HPA axis, hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. There's also the ovarian adrenal thyroid. So like, you know, it's not just one, you can support them all. And I think some people find that overwhelming. To me, I'm like, oh, there's just a lot of opportunity. And a lot of times if you're supporting one area, it's going to have an overflow to the other area also. So that's a good thing. I always like to take the optimistic route. Okay. So Karan said how adrenal glands affect blood pressure, PCOS, and stress. All right. So I'm going to talk about this a little bit. PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's kind of like a misnomer. It's like a poorly named disease, but since it's taken so long to get recognition, they don't want to change the name of it. There's four types of PCOS. There is insulin resistance, blood sugar related, inflammation-based, post-birth control pill, and adrenal PCOS. I have a podcast episode about this with Jillian Greaves fairly recently, last 3 months probably. And it's almost a misdiagnosis, almost. So adrenal PCOS is the real like sad part about that is all the stuff that they recommend for other PCOS would make adrenal PCOS so much worse. So there are three diagnostic criteria for PCOS, irregular cycle, elevated testosterone, which would be like hair through the central, like around your belly button, around your breasts, like maybe on your chin, et cetera. It's a irregular cycle, elevated testosterone, and cysts on your ovaries or the string of pearls. They'd have to look at an ultrasound. So if you do one of those things, it's not enough. So sometimes they'll diagnose this with just irregular periods. But if you have adrenal issues, that would go along with not having a cycle or a menstrual cycle or a period, hypothalamic amenorrhea. So I would say that these could be really related to each other. Regardless, even if you had like insulin resistant PCOS, you'd still want to love on your adrenals because they make DHEA, which helps you control your blood sugar. So I just think like this doesn't ever go out of style at any age or any time of life. Like it's never wrong to love your adrenals. So that's kind of my thought process, which would maybe answer Nazrina's question. How often should minerals be topped? This reminds me of like getting your beer topped off. I don't know if she meant to say it like this, but how often should mineral? I don't know what the question is really there, but I think you support minerals all the time. But anyway. Okay. Alicia said, I want to know how stress can cause hair. I'm guessing hair falling out and how to manage stress. That's such a good question. I definitely don't have the capacity to try to answer that today. I don't know this person, but I did talk about some strategies. I use some other ones in one-on-one practice and it's a little bit of a self journey also, but so many modalities and things you can do, I guess. So how does stress cause hair falling out? Multiple ways. One of the primary ways would be with stress, your thyroid would not function properly. And one of the main side effects of a poorly functioning thyroid would be hair loss. Sometimes you can have like toxic burden and things crossing the blood-brain barrier and causing some brain inflammation and you can have some hair loss. I would say that would be less common. Sometimes if I start working on mold with clients, they'll have a little bit of short-term hair loss. It's really, really annoying. Not like an automatic or super common, but it can happen a little bit. I would say thyroid is the main one. There was also post-COVID stuff. I really think a lot of COVID stuff can relate to really poor mitochondria health. I think COVID like really destroys mitochondria. And so I think that you could always support mitochondria, but there's a lot of details there. I mean, it just kind of depends on the nuance. There's definitely other things that cause hair loss, but I would just say thyroid is a big one. All right. I'm going to like slowly wrap this up. So I covered hormones affecting post-hysterectomy, adrenals and PCOS. We did talk about Dutch cortisol results. I think we covered enough of that actually. Low cortisol, you just are really supportive. I would say the big thing is like making sure you're aware of what's happening in your life. Because if you're not getting sleep, you may need like 7 to 10 hours of sleep when your adrenals are burned out, which is not as much as some people think that they need, right? So sometimes you have to like kind of surrender to needing more because the people who are subject to adrenal fatigue are the ones that are trying to achieve a lot and work out at 4:45 a.m. every day, make sure they get everything done, right? So definitely kind of like, and are considered really healthy and all of those things with people I have for clients anyway. So Jen said, I'm struggling with a temporary stressful situation. Okay, so this, I actually do have some things I do for this. Like, in the past, I've always kind of felt like anytime I'm traveling with the whole family or it's the holidays or something, it's like temporarily stressful. And so what I do is I add a little extra mineral support or a little extra adrenal support. So I've got some different things I like to use that work for if adrenals are high or low or aren't overstimulating, just like a really nourishing blend I like. And so I'll take that or I'll use that and you can kind of play with that. And that's where I think just for like more generic recommendations, I think that doing some of those adaptogenic mushrooms or adding that stuff can be really nice. But I would say if you're under more stress, add more support would be my comment. All right. I feel like that's good. Do you guys have anything else? Otherwise, I am going to wrap this up. I feel like I covered a whole boatload of stuff in 39 minutes. I feel pretty dang good about it. And I want to be respectful of your lunch hour or whatever time you took out of your lovely day. So I've just finished up going through all of these questions and all of this stuff about testing. So I will send out the replay unless you guys have any questions or you want to ask about your case. I've got, you know, the pillars of what I would do with adrenal stuff. I'm hearing from you that you'd like a call on thyroid. Next month's call, community Q&A will be January 23rd, and I will do illness prevention and illness support for this season. So if no one has anything, they don't have a conversation, I want to wrap this up. And if you guys want to register for next month for illness, then that would be awesome. Okay.
Sharing and reviewing this podcast is the best way to help us succeed with our mission to help integrate the best of East and West and empower you to raise the bar on your health story. Just go to reviewthispodcast.com/less-stressed-life. That's reviewthispodcast.com/less-stressed-life. And you'll be taken directly to a page where you can insert your review and hit post.